Hello, welcome to a very special Waldman's Words with Emily Burke and, most or least importantly, Corey Rutschland.
Yeah, that's good. Excited for this one.
As always, the tone of your voice leaves much to be desired, Emily Burke, but you're awesome. I have never, ever interviewed a former band member on this show. So Emily actually hit me up just before I met with her to pregame, and she said, do you need notes on this? And I said, no, I don't need any notes on this. There's no script to any of these interviews, but sometimes there's some bullet points. But for this show, for better or for worse, there are none. I am hoping and thinking that it's going to be unadulterated blasphemy on this broadcast.
Oh, that's always fun. That's
going to be good. Again, your tone.
But my face, but this is a podcast.
Exactly. You actually are excited about this show, so.
Yeah, well, I've interviewed Corey before.
Hashtag fun fact. The reason why I know and own Emily Burke, mm-hmm. She's nodding, that's right. I do not. I'm kidding. Humor is subjective. She owns me. The reason I know Emily Burke is because of a band I was in called Greenlight Theory. And Corey Rutschland was the lead singer and rhythm guitarist. And I was the lead guitarist and did some backup vocals. We called ourselves Team Guitar. And Emily actually interviewed us for
A publication called Hit the Stage Promotion, which is really great.
And you should
check out. Yeah. Trademark.
And so, as a gesture of goodwill, especially since you're talking about it on the air, as a gesture of, I hate when I say, I owe you another dollar. But as a gesture of altruism, I decided to take you out for a cup of coffee at a very bougie Brentwood place that doesn't exist there anymore, for the record, Cafe Lux. It moved. Maybe, I don't know if it moved officially yet because it was under construction. Anyway, I digress. But basically, I took you out for a cup of coffee because you were studying at Drexel and you live in Los Angeles. And within a few minutes, I was like, this girl's the shit. I would love it if she would intern for me. So if nothing else from Greenlight Theory, I acquired the person of Emily Burke because of it. So I'm forever grateful to that and Corey Rutschland for being a part of my life. Emily, do you have one word to comment on that?
Lovely.
Aw.
That's very nice.
Who are our next few guests?
All right. We have coming up, we're going to have the It's Not Dead episode.
Yeah.
We're going to have Mara from
Superior Music Publishing. Yeah. I love that she actually did the quotes thing with her fingers just now. You guys can't see shit.
We're going to have Bobby Meter.
Damn right we are. Who manages Bobby Meter?
Ross Roby.
Ross Roby. Where did Ross Roby go to school?
Drexel.
Drexel, not Temple.
Full circle, everybody.
Full triangle.
Yeah. And then Jason Hollis.
Jason Hollis, who managed a band called the Pink Spiders. So that's pretty exciting for me. And right after that, we've got Chris Foytel, who works for this label called
Epitaph,
which Emily Burke works
there too sometimes.
I was assuming you were going to say four, but that's fine. That's the beauty of conversation. So back to Corey Rutschland. We're going to call him just after these ad songs, but before anything happens, I just want to say that I fucking love Corey. He is my little brother from different parents, and I'm really excited right now. So stick around for this fun episode of Waldman's Words featuring Emily Burke and Corey Rutschland. Bye! Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Emily Burke and Corey Rutschland.
Hi, everyone.
What's up?
Corey, I'm really excited.
I'm more excited.
That's probably true, but I'm really excited.
I've been excited since you started Waldman's Words to be on here any time soon, so.
Well, at first, I never thought I would put – I hate the phrase put someone on the spot because technically an inquiry is putting someone on the spot, but I never thought that I'd put you on the Scott. Oh, shit.
The Scott spot?
The hot spot Scott.
Exactly where I want to be.
We're actually not going to talk about anything substantive. We're just going to add words to this. And I'm looking at Emily right now, and she's looking at the wall with a, like, oh my fucking God, is this happening look. So this is great.
It's basically just going to be a recorded session of two guys catching up and one girl kind of, like, hearing what the hell these two guys went through.
Yeah.
Friendship. That's cute. It's yeah.
Cute is a word that you don't use to describe an apartment, you know, because that means it's small. And, I mean, yes, we are cute, but the way you use it, Emily, what can you reword that? Seriously.
Oh, friendship.
That's yay.
Nice and substantial.
Substantial and nice. So speaking of substantial and nice, let's get to the narcissism part of the show. How did we meet?
Oh, man. Well, we're just really, really great. And, you know, when two great people exist, they have to know each other.
Exactly. That's why Martin Luther King hung out with Donald Trump.
Yeah, right. Now, I met you, Scott, when I was fresh off the plane from Oregon. Well, actually, fresh out of my car, because I drove from Oregon to California right after high school. And I was a newly 18-year-old kid exploring California lifestyle, and I started living with my older brother, Kyle Rutschland, as some people might know from Greenlight Theory.
Some means one or more.
Yeah.
So and some people in this room, which is two people, no.
Some. You.
Many.
Well, so I was living with Kyle, and at the time we wanted to do something, you know, pretty awesome with ourselves, but we didn't know what it was because I had both never, you know, went to college or anything like that, and we both knew that we loved music, and we both knew that we wanted to do entertainment in some way. So him and I started writing like one or two songs together, and we were like, oh, this is kind of fun. We should get a full band going. Like, we should start introducing this to people and seeing if they like it and see if people want to play with it.
I just want to say one quick thing, though. You guys, obviously, you've lived in two separate states together, Hawaii and Oregon. Did you ever, because I honestly don't even know this, which is kind of cool, Waldman's words, knowing none. I don't know why it just sounded like Miyagi, but, or Yoda.
Use the Force, Luke. Hmm?
But basically, did you guys ever write any music together pre-LA? Because I know you wrote songs before that. I believe Goodnight Beautiful was one of them.
Yeah, actually, that is a good question. We have never written before that, like, even back when we were living together in Hawaii, because that was, like, when I was just getting into writing music. And at the time, when I first picked up guitar, Kyle had a guitar from our dad, and he was trying to play it, and he was kind of trying to teach himself some things. And then when I started picking up, Kyle was like, well, fuck that. Corey can play guitar. I'll just – never mind. Because I would hog the guitar all the time, I think. And so that kind of pushed him out of wanting to play guitar for a little while. So when I first started playing music, I had a friend that was my age that wanted to do music too, and he was...
Is this Ricardo?
No, this was Adam Herchick.
Oh, I've never heard that name, but it sounds Jewish.
Yeah, he is.
Yay!
He was the person that actually taught me most of what I know on guitar to begin with, and we had our very first band or group that I'd ever played with, we called ourselves Pretty Going Fast.
Mm-hmm.
Just a duo, a duet basically with just two of us playing guitar.
Kind of like This Wild Life?
Yeah, kind of, except this is back when autotune was big, so we like wanted to use a lot of autotune.
Pretty Going Fast!
Yep, so it was autotune, acoustic, like... just a bro session of a band, and it was hilarious. And we actually played my first show, aside from playing the Roxy with Greenlight Theory for my first show.
Just want to say fuck you for having your first show in LA at the Roxy. I just want to go on record and say that I actually performed at that show with you. My first show was at the Cobalt Cafe, which I probably still have SARS from.
I want to add to that record by saying I am very privileged.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't fishing for compliments there, but I'll fucking take them. Continue with Pretty Going Fast, because I want this to go slow.
No, yeah, this needs to be known. If anyone was ever, you know, a fan of Greenlight Theory and they wanted to know how badly I actually sounded when I was, you know, learning how to play and sing, they can actually check out Pretty Going Fast on YouTube. I think there's like one or two videos that we still kept up just because we were like, fuck it, this should be like a hidden little history in the depths of the
YouTube. Fuck it, we're going live. Fuck it.
Yeah. Fuck it.
So that's
still up online, and we played our first show ever at a Hot Topic on Maui in Hawaii, and we actually got like a couple of our friends out there. We drew some people into the store. There was like Hot Topic was even doing like special discount that day because we were playing or something like that. It was pretty fun.
Was the Hot Topic in Maui? Because I love Hawaii. I was in Kauai once, but was it kind of a combination of a Pacific Sunwear and Hot Topic? Because I just picture everyone in Hawaii just saying bra and wearing sandals and board shorts.
Right? You would think that. No, it's actually funny. Hot Topic there was actually a big store. I mean, PacSun was too. Like, PacSun was where I used to shop at a lot. But
and, work. Topic, and work. Yeah, oh, and shit. Work. Oh, shit. We're doing some digging, Corey.
I sold some jeans once in my life.
That's dope. They were tight. Get it?
Oh, yeah. They're always tight. You can't wear butt tight and skinny jeans.
If you wear jeans and you do not destroy your sperm count, you are doing it wrong.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Thank you.
I think that was actually in the PacSun ad, too.
And even in the women's jeans. If you wear these jeans and you're not destroying your sperm count, you are doing it wrong. PacSun.
No, yeah, it. So that was a thing in my life, and that's how I basically got started. And I think that's part of the reason why Kyle and I never really wrote music, is because I had someone else that I had like more of an outlet with. Like, I was basically at this kid Adam Herchick's house like 24/7. Like, I would be at his house on weekends, pretty much every day after school. We would just be working on writing new music and like just doing dumb shit that kids do.
Well, you know what? Honestly, dumb shit eventually turns into great shit, because everyone who starts guitar or singing or any instrument is equal. I mean, obviously, you might have a better ear or more natural talent, but you have to foster it with work. And, you know, neither one of us is fucking Van Halen, but when I met you, you were more than competent guitar player. I mean it. So
thank you.
Being sincere about it, I mean, you were so, I mean, for lack of a better word, you were so fucking green when you moved to LA. You were excited, you had just graduated high school, and you moved to LA for music. And so let's get into that. So you graduate high school, and neither one of us are trust fund kids, so you moved here with the intentions of making some money while supplanting your music career. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I worked through high school, basically. I mean, I worked while playing music and, you know, trying to get good grades. And so I had saved up enough money to where I thought it was sufficient enough to move to LA, at least to sleep in the living room at my brother's place and split rent with him.
Wait, slow down. Split rent while sleeping in the living room? That does not sound like a fair arrangement. Anyway, sorry, I digress. So, sorry?
Sounds very unfair, but at the time, it made sense, and we didn't split it evenly.
Okay, sorry.
Fortune, and he paid more of it for the bedroom kind of deal. But at the time, you know, 18-year-old, fresh out of high school, I was like, fuck, I'm just happy to be in California and, you know, working towards something, some kind of career and my dreams, you know?
Listen, as a manager, we deal with splits all the time. So the word typically is assumed even split, but, you know, obviously, if you did not pay this, I'm not trying to judge. Actually, fuck it, I am judging. If it was an even split and you were in the living room, then you needed a manager for your realtor shit. That's all I'm saying.
Pretty much. But, yeah.
Sidebar.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, once I moved out there, it
only took about maybe 5 or 6 months before we had met, or I had met you, and Kyle had introduced us to each other. Because I was just working at the time at like a vegan cafe. That was like my first job when I moved out to California. I had never served tables before or anything, but I kept hearing that serving was the way to make some quick cash. And
literal quick cash.
Yeah, quick cash. And so there was a vegan restaurant like really close to my apartment that we were at when we first moved out there. It was literally like a 5-minute walk from there. So I went and applied, and then I got the job as a
cashier slash server, and so I started working there, and I was there for about 6 months. And this is pre PacSun, by the way.
Oh no, I know the sequence, but I really want everyone else listening to learn it, because I feel that you had about 5 or 6 jobs in the time that you were here, and we'll get all that other stuff in a bit. But So you worked at, it was Leaf, right? Was that the name?
Yeah, like Leaf Organics before it closed down. It was a pretty cool place. I mean, it had a lot of issues, but it, you know, it did the trick.
It was your first job. Yeah. And so did you meet me, again, going back to the narcissism portion of the show, did you meet me when you were already working at Leaf, or what's the sequence of events there?
I'm pretty sure, if I'm remembering correctly, I think it was about midway through, like about 4 months in of working at Leaf, is when I met you, 4 or 5 months, because I didn't have a job for like the first maybe month, mm-hmm. and then I got that job.
You were slumming it.
Yeah, and then I met you, and then that's when I showed you Goodnight Beautiful, which was a song that I wrote by myself when I was in Oregon. That was like the first real, I mean, like, I obviously with Pretty Going Fast stuff, that's all real songs too, but this is like the first song I wrote entirely by myself, and I felt like it really spoke volumes of like what I was feeling, because usually I don't know if anyone knows this about me aside from Greenlight Three guys, but I usually tend to write from a
different perspective, like a hypothetical perspective, I guess, in a sense. So like, not a lot of songs that I write have actually happened to me, but they're things that could have, or things that I maybe...
It's storytelling.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just how I like to write most of my songs. Some songs are true and about real situations.
Goodnight Beautiful was the first one that I actually wrote that was anything real like that. And so I showed you that just on an acoustic guitar, just playing, I think, in your living room or my living room. I can't remember if you came over to our place.
You actually played it for me in my car. I believe you and I went to the Real Inn and had, because your brother was playing a show with someone else, we weren't in a band at the time, and that's I was really close with your brother. I met him actually at the Starbucks by the law firm that I worked at, and we became friends. And so when he said that his little brother was moving to LA, I was like, okay, well, I could be, you know, a positive influence for him, and he probably doesn't have, you know, aside from you, like an older influence that could, you know, just be kind and show him around. So he was playing a show at another place that went out of business at a coffee shop. And yeah, I mean, it's hard opening a business, but we went to a seafood place. We had a fun time. And then we drove to the show, and I believe you played me Goodnight Beautiful. And I will say this on the record. I was like, okay, this is okay. Thanks. Emily just laughed.
Well, I want to get a little bit of perspective. What year was this? Like, when was this?
You remind me of that meme. It's like, what year is it?
I don't know where.
What year did you graduate high school, Corey? Was it 2012 or 2013?
2012.
So it was then.
Oh, okay. So like,
thanks, Obama.
4 years ago. It was pretty, or
well, yeah. Five. No, I met him, I'd say, a few months after you graduated high school, correct? Something like that.
Yeah, basically. Because I had graduated in June of 2012, and then I came to California that same month, and I met you around 5 months later, so around like November.
Yeah, so he played me Goodnight Beautiful, and you know, he's a nice guy, and Kyle was in a group. We're not going to give that group a shout out, but I remember thinking that was all right. I mean, music is subjective. There's no wrong answer and there's no right answer. It's like, you like what you like. I mean, there's people who don't like the City Drive or Lido Beach, even though everyone likes Greenlight Theory. Wink. But the thing is that, you know, I listened to the act that Kyle was in, and I was like, okay, this is okay. I listened to the song you played me, and I said, oh, it's okay. But I did admire you for being so young and moving out to LA knowing pretty much no one. I moved out here, I knew a few people, but I moved out here at 22 with a college degree, so it was a little bit safer, quote-unquote, for me. So I think it's badass that you did that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think anyone being able to get out of their hometown and try to live somewhere else is pretty cool.
It's like a pop punk song.
Yeah, I'm super pop punk, so I really respect that.
So let's go into it. So you played me that, and we hung out. And then how did we get into a band together? Because obviously Good Night Beautiful ended up becoming a song that I really enjoyed playing live, and I liked the song. But I'd say on our EP, I digress, it was either my it's probably my like fourth favorite song. But you know, I enjoyed playing it live, and I thought that the recording was really good, and the acoustic recording was good. But I thought the electric recording was done really well. Shout out to Danny Balistocki for doing that. So how did we decide to actually play in a band together?
So because Kyle used to show me Lido Beach songs like before I'd even moved out to California, and I was always like, oh, that's really cool. Like, and I actually, when I listened to Lido Beach, like back when you were showing me it, I thought like, I just assumed that you were like a touring band at that point, which in some senses you were. You would, you know, you'd play shows in New York with Lido Beach, and you were going all over the place in California. And but when I came into California and then I was still listening to Lido Beach songs, I was like, oh, you know, after I met you, I was like, dude, he's a really cool guy. He knows what he's doing. He obviously has business sense and music sense. Thank you. I think there was a point in time after I had showed you Good Night Beautiful, and there was about maybe a week or two in between, or maybe a couple of weeks, I can't really remember, where I just really, I felt like I had wanted to earn, not just like your respect necessarily, but like I wanted to earn your...
Just so you know, you already had my respect. I love that this show, because without a shred of hesitation, I mean, you're my favorite person as a friend I've had on this show. So this is going to be a love fest. Obviously, I encourage you to give me shit, but despite not thinking that Good Night Beautiful or any Lido Beach songs or Bohemian Rhapsody, I recognized that you had talent. And I also dug that you recorded it by yourself. So you can go back to complimenting me now.
Yeah. Well, basically, likewise. Like, I mean, I saw that you had talent and everything. And I basically saw you right off the bat as like almost like a mentor. And I wanted to kind of get into that because I wanted to, you know, basically play with some experienced people in California. That was like the whole point of me going out there, because I had never taken guitar lessons or anything like that. I had never had any real kind of practice with anyone that knew what they were doing, you know. And so I said, all right, so I showed Scott Good Night Beautiful, and I was talking to Kyle about it after we had hung out that day. And I was like, Kyle, I wrote Good Night Beautiful, and you know, I think it's a good song, but I really want to write something now that I've done this move, and I want to write something that maybe, you know, we can show to Scott that would get his interest going, because like I know he has Lido Beach and everything, but I wanted to basically see if I could get your interest into like starting something new, because you know I wanted to work with you so badly.
And just so you know, though, Lido Beach essentially was that was after the City Drive, just if anyone's listening and cares. But I did Lido Beach after the City Drive, and essentially I always had either students or friends helping out, but it was never full-time like the City Drive was, or eventually Greenlight Theory became. So we're going to get to, you know, you showing Rooftop Kiss, but I was clamoring for the band situation, a collaborative unit of a bunch of people working together. So it was really good timing that you moved out to LA.
Yeah, it's true, I guess. And looking back at it now, you're totally right. Like, I feel like you were also looking for something that Lido Beach wasn't necessarily supplying at the time.
Yep.
And I'm glad I did it. I mean, because right after you Good Night Beautiful, and I talked to Kyle about all that, then I ended up writing what you said. I wrote this, or I started writing this song called Rooftop Kiss at the time, and it was going really well, and I showed it to Kyle after I'd wrote some of it, and he was like, wow, this is great. And well, Kyle actually started help writing me, writing some lyrics with me, and we wrote a first verse and a chorus, and then the second verse. So we had two verses and the choruses, and I'm like, okay, this sounds pretty solid, like I really like it. And I didn't want to waste too much time before, you know, it got too long between the next time I saw you. So I had Kyle hit you up again, or I might have hit you up, and I was like, hey, dude, I want to show you this new song I started writing with Kyle, and we really like it, and like I want to get your input. So I'm pretty sure I played this one live for you, though.
Yeah, in your, I don't remember if it was around the same time that we had the steak Thanksgiving in your place, but Steaksgiving. Both of us are straight edge vegan warriors. No, it was, I don't remember the exact sequence of it. I think maybe we even decided at that point, but you showed me Rooftop Kiss, and it wasn't done, but there was a there was an intro guitar part. The verses and the choruses were there. Obviously, it had it eventually morphed into a different title, but I heard it, and I was like, holy fuck, this is good. I mean, seriously, I heard it, and I was blown away by how catchy it was and how I thought how smart it was, and smart with simplicity, like not simplicity in a bad way, but it's so straightforward and it was real. And so I think I said to you, wow, this is fucking awesome. I want to write a bridge. And yeah, that's
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were like, you're like, dude, I think we could actually do something with this. Like, this sounds very mature. It's got a nice catch to it, like a nice hook in the chorus and everything. And I was like, great. Well, I was like, you know, let's grab your guitar and let's work on this. You know, if you want to start something up, like, might as well just work on this song for right now and see what can come out of it. And that song eventually, with all of us becoming Greenlight Theory, eventually we met Drew.
Well, wait, and say what the song became. What was the song called? And then we're going to take a short break.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, yeah, so Rooftop Kiss then became what my favorite song is to this day, honestly, is Who's Lost and Found Now.
And do you know that song, Emily Burke?
I do know that song.
Me too.
It's a good song.
It's a good song. It was the very first video we shot. And, I mean, the video shoot for that video, holy fuck. Like, I'm still sore from that. But basically... What, sorry?
It was a journey. About a six-hour hike through all of the mountains that California has to offer.
It was the Rocky Mountains. No, it was great. But... we're going to take a short break, and we're going to go into, I guess, after we wrote that song. And yeah, we'll talk about adding Drew to it. And one thing I really, really like about the history of this band, which obviously was not too long, was that it was always the same four people. And we worked hard. So let's take a short break. Emily, what's a one-word adjective that you would use to describe what just transpired?
It was pleasant. Aww. It was nice to hear the history. It was nice to listen to you guys. Friendship is a great thing, everyone.
Why did you have to say friendship is a great thing? Because until then you sounded so sincere, and then you're like, friendship is a great thing.
Make good friends. They'll help you out. That's an actual piece of advice.
Anyway, Corey, could you give an adjective to describe this? Because I have one, and it's sexy. What's yours?
I'm gonna be on the same page with you and say erotic.
Whoa. So both of the dudes with significant others that are the opposite sex, not that there's anything wrong with that for the same sex, are using really raunchy words, and Emily has to be boring with pleasant.
I don't know what show I was listening to.
Well, basically, there was so much subtext behind what we were saying. We were basically just saying we want to fuck each other the whole show.
Oh, I'm sorry I didn't pick up on that.
Sorry, Kelly and Carmen. Anyway, we're going to take a short... Sorry?
It's not just friendship. It's a childhood love story.
Let me tell you something. Every day I would wake up with Corey holding my bosom. We're going to take a short break. We're going to get back to Waldman's Words featuring Scott Waldman,
me,
Emily Burke, and Corey Rutschlin. Stick around. We're back with Waldman's Words. I have trouble saying the name of this show, and that's a problem. It's a tongue twister.
I mean, it's your own name.
I'm
that's
stupid.
That's like the first thing you learn how to say.
See, Emily is not a bitch. So at any rate, Corey.
Mouthful. It is a mouthful.
It's a mouthful. Wait, Corey, try to say toy boat five times fast.
Toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat.
Oh, okay.
You know, you actually did it,
yeah.
And I'm fucking mad right now because I thought you were going to be like, toy boat. God damn it, Corey.
Fun fact, I'm a prodigy of tongue twisters.
All right, I got to stump you.
Irish wristwatch.
Yeah, do that, because Corey is an Irish wristwatch, so I'd love to hear this.
I actually wear Irish
wristwatch. You can't even say it once.
I can't even say
let's
it
see, once. Let's hear you do it five times, bro.
I'm a fake.
I'm a fake! Good. Well, now that we trumped you in the tongue twister competition, which, for the record, Toy Boat is impressive. So, mazel tov. So, we were discussing just before the break... how we started where Rooftop Kiss became Who's Lost and Found. And found, now I can't even say found. This show is brought to you by Stupid. No, Who's Lost and Found Now. Sorry?
By people who can't talk.
By people who can't read good. So you touched on Drew, and you obviously touched Drew a lot too, but how did that come into it?
Well, Kyle basically was like the stepping stone for all of us to kind of meet towards the middle, because I mean him working at Starbucks, basically he got to meet a lot of people coming in and out, and at the time, luckily, he was just a really fun personality, attracting, like a magnet, you know, like anyone wanted to meet him and know who he was once they started talking to him. And I guess Drew at the time worked at Starbucks as well, and Kyle and Drew met by just some odd circumstance of someone calling out sick or something, and Drew had to come fill in at Kyle's location, I believe, or it might be the other way around. Kyle might have gone to fill at Drew's location. Either way, details don't really matter.
No. Make this as boring as possible, because I'm not falling asleep.
And so, you know, when coffee's made...
Coffee is made from Sumatra. No, I actually had the most recent guest was... Well, when this airs, it might be a little bit jumbled, but Mike Herrera from the band MXPX, and we discussed coffee, and I told him how Seattle was my favorite place for it, but... It's crazy because most of the coffee in Seattle is from South America. Anyway, fun fact. Keep going.
Seattle's best coffee.
My favorite place, I swear, right by where they throw the fish and you can eat mac and cheese.
Oh my god, there's going to be two full episodes all about Seattle coffee.
All about it. Yo, Emily, work on a sponsorship and shit, yo. Waldman's Words brought to you by Seattle's Best, son.
Last time you said the only sponsor you want is any coconut water brand. That was hilarious, and fuck. I'm going to make it happen.
I fucked that up. The only sponsor I want is something I like. So coconut water would be dope. Dopenut water is more like it. Or open this pit up water. Anything from coconut water to coffee, and if... Fender Telecasters want to sponsor this show, yeah. I'd be so fucking happy. Anyway, less narcissism, more Corey. So, Drew, he joined the band. We were a four-piece, and I guess tell from your perspective, because we touched upon the Roxy. Fuck you again. But I want to hear about what that was like, because I think that we actually marketed it really well in the beginning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, we started very strong for a band that... I mean, Kyle and I, at least, were very fresh and new to the music scene. We didn't really know what the hell we were doing. But, I mean, with you and Drew, it's kind of like experienced people who have done...
Experience means old. I know what you mean.
Experience means sexy.
Yes, sexapence. Keep going.
Sure. but, yeah, like, with you guys, like, kind of helping the whole band out as a collective, like, it really... It made things, I will say, a lot easier and a lot more comfortable. When it comes down to getting things set up, because from my eyes, like just starting out, like I had no idea how to show at all. Like to begin with, I thought, you know, if we just played enough acoustic little mini shows outside of venues, eventually, like the owner of the venue would come out and be like, "Hey, like here's your golden ticket," like Willy Wonka or some shit, and then we'd just go in and start playing a show next week or something. But you know, I quickly learned that that's not necessarily how it works. I mean,
not how it works, how people aren't willing to help others, or not how it works, how there's a lot of misconceptions on how do you get from A to B in music?
Both, honestly. I mean, like, California taught me really, really early on that it's a competition out there, man. Like, you can't just have good music and, you know, start playing shows. You really got to, like, hustle and talk to, you know, you got to get in contact with the venue owners promoters and stuff. And you really have to work your ass off.
Damn right you do. Most people don't. Sidebar on that. Emily, because you're not on stage, and I'm on stage much less than I used to be, in fact, like... exponentially less as a manager now, but what have you seen going to shows in Philly and going to shows in LA? Have you seen the hustling drop for flyering and in-person stuff? Like, obviously people hustle online and most people do it wrong, but like, what have you seen? Because you're younger than both of us, so I'm very curious what you think.
There's really not a lot of in-person stuff anymore when it comes to that, especially when you go to like any shows. And I definitely find that people will brush you off really easily, which always kind of pisses me off, because if there is an act that I really like and want to talk to, they'll always just be like, oh, it's just like another person I'm trying to talk with my friends, which is fine. But at the same time, like...
You mean interpersonal connections?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I feel like it just doesn't happen anymore. Like, there are some people who will try to get to know you, but no one ever really gives a crap.
As in the numbers game. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Corey and I agreed on this, where if we were performing acoustic, and we're going to get into the rock scene a bit, and then we're going to discuss why the band failed. It didn't fail. We stopped it. But we would rather, if we were performing acoustic for people, we would rather really engage with two people who we believe would become diehards or just nice people than flyer to 75 people who are going to look at the flyer and either put their gum in it or potentially wipe their butts with it. So I would love your take on this, Corey.
Emily has it right. I mean, the way bands act now, well, bands and fans, honestly, like, it's both worlds kind of colliding in the worst way at this day and age. It's like a band goes and plays a show that they never went out and really promoted for in person in the first place. They just posted, you know, online flyers about it. And then they expect, you know, a turnout of like 100+ people, when realistically starting out, you're really only going to get like 10 of your close friends, maybe. And you're playing to them, and then, you know, these bands wonder why people didn't really come out to see them. And then,
wait, I sent a Facebook invite, bro.
You're like, dude, you said yes to the Facebook invite. Like, that's a binding contract. And it's just like, then they start to get the fans, like Emily said, who actually support them and actually like their music for their music and not just their family and friends. And they want to come up and see them off stage once they're done playing their show, and this band is already packing up, ready to go, because they're just like, they're jaded and they're over it, and they don't want to actually make that connection with their fans. And I think that's just kind of ass backwards in a sense.
No, it's ass forwards and backwards. And I just want to say this very quickly, which I know that you're going to be stoked on. I just want to give shout outs to, I guess, a few fans who eventually became homies, and they're on the West Coast. I would say Megan, Tati, and Linda. Those three girls were so sweet, sincere, and ardent supporters of what we were doing. And we're acutely aware that we're not Weezer and we're not Green Day. We were a band that had fun and wrote catchy songs. But the three of them, I'm just saying, because eventually, obviously, as you know, Drew and I decided to leave, and then the band dissolved, but we would not have done this band probably for half as long had it not been for them.
Oh, absolutely, dude. They were the lifeline of our support group, honestly. I mean, like, yeah, we definitely did our part of going out and getting our fans, which is how we even met them in the first place. But at the end of the day, they were the ones that really helped promote us, that really got their friends into it.
And they had the street team, man. They headed the street team.
They were basically pros at peer pressure, you know? Like, when I saw them, it's their age group, I was like, dude, if Megan or Tati or Linda told me to do anything, and I was there, like, at that level, I would do it, because they were just so convincing, and they really believed in us.
They're the reason I murdered several children in cold blood. I mean, it's 100% on them.
Absolutely. Just for peer pleasure.
Peer pleasure and peer pressure. That was a Freudian slip that worked out, because I definitely... Anyway, I'm going to stop this joke right now.
A new song title, by the way.
Yeah. Yo, shut up, bro. Don't tell me how to write songs. Anyway, so I guess what went wrong?
Too much success.
Oh, yeah, dude. The millions and millions of dollars went to our heads.
Yeah, the fame of the paparazzi, dude. You know, not enough of it, honestly.
Yep. Into it. That was it.
No, it could have been so many things, but I mean, I'm sure if you asked each of us individually in a separate room, we would all have like our own ideas of what could have gone better and what happened to eventually, you know, make it
to a point where we just all hit a stopping point. But we also were all on different understanding level, I think, towards the end of it. I mean, like, we all wanted to write good music. That was the general consensus. We
I hope so, right?
Yeah.
And we all wanted to have fun with it. But I think overworking our actual jobs instead of focusing more on music was a factor that probably played into it. I think we were all kind of scared of money at all times when we were doing the band thing, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like, I think you definitely have to have a sense of, you know, saving money and keeping yourself afloat. But at the same
like managing
time,
your finances?
Yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword, though, because I think, you know, at the end of the day, you're trying to make this your career, and I think that we played it too safe, honestly.
I never heard you say that. That's an interesting thought.
Because, yeah, I
mean, I know. Wow.
Yeah, I did, because I do that every day. I mean, even to this day, I'm trying to, like, get out of that headspace of, oh, I need to save up this amount of money to be safe or to be okay just in case.
You're an old soul, dude. When I met you, I mean, because you were born in 1994. I was born in 81. You were born literally a month after my fucking bar mitzvah. So I became a man by Jewish law, and then you were born. So yeah, we had a big age gap. Wait, what were you going to say? Sorry.
I said you became a man when I became a baby.
Exactly. Well, before you became a baby. Like, I was a man in the eyes of that. But the thing was is that when I met you, you didn't seem like an 18-year-old. You seemed wise beyond your years. And so for someone even at 18, like, I can tell you that when I was an 18-year-old freshman in college, like, I had exponentially less responsibility regarding finances. And I think college protects you. And so it was good that you were into that, but as well, it's a double-edged sword, because then you could become way too conservative in some areas that maybe you should be a tad more rambunctious and liberal.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of those things, you know, like any band should, it's you're investing yourself into this company, which is your band or this business that you're trying to make it happen, and there's no way you're going to make yourself presentable to the eyes of these people who already have a lot of money and who are looking for new acts to sign. You know, you don't invest in yourself. And I think that was one of the big things is, you know, like, yeah, we had talent where it came into natural talent of writing music, and maybe even performing became something that was more and more comfortable for us.
And we were good at promoting. We were very good in the beginning. I thought we were great at it.
And that's the thing is we were strong promoters, man. Like, we basically commanded the audience. Like, whenever we would go out to the shows and we'd play outside in lines that were waiting to go into bigger shows or anything like that, like, that was our thing, you know what I mean? And I mean, I'm glad that you had that kind of sense from an old experience to do that, because honestly, I don't know if I would have ever thought about that. I mean, maybe eventually, like, 3 years down the road.
That's how we got every single one of our fans. Literally, yeah. It wasn't the shows that we played. I mean, obviously, it worked to some extent. Let me amend that. That's how we got the vast majority of our fans, like the lifers, where it was via hustling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we have some strong fans online that, you know, live all the way in like Australia,
mm-hmm.
but
that buy our merchandise and send us packages. Or let's talk past tense. Sorry, that bought our merchandise, RIP, and sent us packages, RIP.
Yeah, and they still listen to our music to this day, which is amazing. But We did the promoting game strong. I think we fell off the map a little bit. I think laziness was a factor in, you know, me at least, or at least some of us. And
no, I mean, that's fair. I think that I didn't expect to hear the verbiage of what you said before, and I would say I agree with it to an extent. My theory on it was that I think we peaked at our CD release show, as far as. I think we sold out the Mint. We had a lot of people buying our merch that night. We had people smiling and cheering and hooting and hollering even before we got on stage. It was an event. And for some reason, it just tapered after that. And usually a show like that for, you know, it was our first CD. It was an EP. But you would assume that after that, you'd go on to bigger and better. And I feel that in LA, we never, ever reached the lengths of, I guess, the longer applauses, the people that were there. I don't know what the disconnect was, but I guess that would be, I guess, the apex or the climax of the band, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that, too. I mean, we... I think we... I don't know, we all didn't collectively get lazy, but we all kind of like lost something that we had after that CD release, or during that CD release show. And I think we could have kept going if we had that same progress that we were working towards. And after we released the CD and everything, I think if we kept working towards that kind of idea and that same kind of work ethic, then we would have been fine. But you know, we started to grow towards different like ideas of music. I think individually Kyle wanted to do a lot of like screamo stuff. I think you and I were pretty much on the same track of wanting to do what we were doing but make it better. And I think Drew kind of had that idea too, but Drew also almost like was like, let's just write anything that's good.
I mean, I'm not gonna say that this is an unfair assessment. So I mean, all four of us came from completely different backgrounds. I mean, I'll oversimplify and just say, like, you're Never Shout Never. Kyle was, you know, Senses Fail. I was Nirvana. And Drew, actually, I would say, like, was, like, Periphery, right? But we somehow made it work. And I think that it's crazy because if we do the math, like, we were writing a lot more before the CD came out. And then after it came out, like... Yes, we released an EP, Afterthoughts, which was essentially an afterthought, to be honest with you. And, you know, we did a few singles, but I can't count on two full hands the amount of songs we wrote after the A Gift from Your Ex-Boyfriend came out. And it's Girlfriend. I fucked up. That shows a lot of brains. Continue.
I think what might have happened for me, at least during that writing process, which I'm sure some or a lot of artists can relate to while they're starting out, is, you know, we started writing this our first EP, right, A Gift from Your Ex-Boyfriend, and then we recorded it and we released it, and we were pretty hyped about most of the songs on there. And then once we did that and we tried to shop it out, we didn't get too much attention for it. We got recognition, but we didn't get much attention in terms of, like, the label's eyes.
Industry.
Yeah, the industry. That's when we started to kind of like really slow down and try to, or at least me, I tried to really focus more on writing that one hit song kind of thing. And I know that you guys were trying to give me kind of input on that as well. And we're like, okay, let's try and like, let's just write all the time, but let's also try to like really focus on, you know, a few main songs to really make them as good as they can possibly be. But that can sometimes lead into a trap where you're just kind of like, okay, now I'm stuck with writer's block because I don't know how good this song can actually be. Like, I don't hear the full potential. And we could have just dropped it and moved on to a new song, but instead we're like, let's try to make this.
So we harped?
Yeah, we were like, let's try to make this an average song better. And I feel like.
You can only mask a turd so hard, right? It's like.
Yeah.
I mean, we're gonna actually shift. That'll be the last thing before we say our goodbyes, but, you know, it's. If you put Tapatio on a piece of shit, it's still a piece of shit. It's just spicier. I love your look right now, Emily. It's amazing.
I really like Tapatio. So,
you like Tapatio? Yeah. Me too. Tapatio is the shit, bro. Yeah, see what I did there? What? What'd you do?
Now it doesn't. Because we just talked about putting it all over shit.
Exactly. And so let's end this in a sea of feces. So, Corey, I just want you to know that I appreciated your 100% candor. I know that... You know, it's like talking about an ex, right? So sometimes it gets a little disheartening, but I think we're still close, and it's good to have perspective on this. And I hope that if some kid is listening to this show in some random part of Central America, that they learned about a band that had some dynamics and had some things going for it, and eventually it didn't work out because. Most bands are not Aerosmith and the Rolling Stones. Most. So.
Yeah. So many routes you can take that leads you to failure, but there's also so many routes you can take that lead you to success. You just have to find what works for you, and you got to roll with it. Honestly, you got to, and you got to invest. I think.
You invest time. Time is the biggest resource we have. So.
Yeah.
Well, that was a really good way to capture the moral of the story, because I like to make this informative and educational. So before Corey lists his socials, and just so you know, after Greenlight Theory, Corey is still a musician. He just has yet to announce a project, which I honestly think is smart. So do keep it up that way. And when you have something, I mean, I can assure you I will listen to it. And I can assure you at least Tati, Linda, and Megan will too. And Emily.
And
so, Emily, what adjective would you use to describe what just happened?
Not erotic.
Wow. Well, you know what? I'll take it, because maybe on your end it wasn't erotic. This one was way more erotic to me. I would say neurotic.
Okay, yeah.
That's the one I would say. What about you, Mr. Corey?
I think we definitely took it from an erotic place in the beginning to a more just an emotional state.
Yeah, sincere.
I'll take it.
It was very feels.
it hit me all the feels. Team guitar for life. So, Corey, I guess list your socials and how people can check out what you're doing or get a hold of you.
I can't list my social security on here.
Oh, I thought I had the dad jokes.
Dad jokes for days? No.
Yeah.
I have Instagram. You can follow me at Corey Rutchland. It's just my full name spelled out.
Can you spell it out just in case?
Yeah, just in case people don't know how to spell Rutledge. Or...
It's CoreyRutchland. Just like that on every kind of social media.
Creative.
Yeah, super original.
Well, it works, man. It's smart. Scott Waldman was actually taken by some other asshole. So I'm Scott Lewis Waldman. Fuck that guy, man.
So all Scott Waldmans are assholes.
Every single Scott Waldman, including this one, is an asshole. Emily, do you have a final question for Corey?
How's your day been so far? Everything good? Is this a highlight?
Oh, man. This is definitely the highlight. My day's been pretty good. Just chilling out in my nice new apartment, relaxing, about to go get some toilet paper.
Fuck yeah, dude. Yeah. Scott toilet paper?
Yep.
Yay!
No. Well, yeah, Scott, because I used Cottonelle last time, and that shit sucks.
I mean, I'm just letting you know that I bring all the boys to the yard with my toilet paper.
Yeah, Scott Wallman, Wallman's Words, unsponsored by Cottonelle toilet paper.
Dude, if you want to get me a Scott sponsorship, I will send you a roll. I need that shit.
Yeah?
Yeah, dude.
Literally.
I see what you did there. All right, so anyway, Corey, I really appreciate your time. Emily, who are the next few guests on this show?
Oh, we have the It's Not Dead episode.
Yay!
We have Mara from Superior Music Publishing.
Yay!
We have,
Bobby Meader.
Yes, I'm so close to calling him Billy, but it's Bobby.
Billy Madison?
Yeah. I've never seen that movie.
We have Bobby Meader, and we also have Jason Hollis. Yes. And we also have Emily Burke, who is here for, I'd say, a few more weeks, right? And then you go back to school?
Another month.
So school at Notre Dame, right? That's where you go?
Yeah, I wish. Totally.
Totally. No, I fucked up her school, and it was actually edited out because I was so ashamed of myself. It was the only time I edited this show. But she goes to Drexel, and she's a badass motherfucker. And Corey.
Yo.
I love you, dude.
I love you too, man. And I love this show, and I love what you're doing with it. And I hope you keep doing it and getting better and better and getting more and more fans.
Thank you. That was a really good way to close the show. So on that note, fuck all the haters. Have a good night.